Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and if you've been listening to this program, you know it's about the exploration of our consciousness, our transformation, our planetary transformation, and nothing is more key to that than the awakening of our connection to ET intelligences, to UFOs that are here, and to the realization that we're part of a greater cosmic society. So tonight's guests are going to be talking about this movie that's going to be premiering, Sirius the Movie, and I'll be talking to director Amandeep Kalika and J.D. Sarafin, the producer and director. Welcome, both of you, to the show.
Thank you, Alan.
Okay. So let me ask Amandeep, and then J.D., you could jump in. This is really off the mainstream track. How did you get involved with Stephen Greer, who's really the force behind the film, and with the film in general? Amandeep, how'd you start this process?
Well, to be honest, we don't believe in UFOs, and we didn't believe in ETs. We were coming from a very objective standpoint. When we first contacted Steve, we had just written a studio picture, and we contacted Steve as a possible consultant. Just because he had done disclosure and he had some information, or he keeps telling people he has information, right? So we got him in front of us and we talked to him, and he mentioned, just like we did, that this would make an amazing documentary if done properly. And by that we mean at a very high production level with the right key interviews and putting a narrative together that really sums it up best for mainstream people, because one of the problems we keep finding is it's a really complex matter. Whether we're talking about consciousness, or we're talking about, you know, electrogravitics, or whether we're talking about extraterrestrials, these are really complex things when a normal person is not having those types of contact experiences. So, go ahead.
No, I agree. It's probably the most mind-bending concept people can relate to, because it means that reality is nothing the way we've been told it is. And that's shocking. That creates a collective cultural trauma for people. And I think that's why a presentation in a film like this is so important. It starts to soften the tension around our paradigm shift. So
yeah, absolutely. It's what JD and I keep talking about is we're trying to bend the brain plasticity of the normal viewer so that they can make these associations. So they start looking up in the sky more often. No, they start, you know, researching what type of inventions can be made or out there. Like young people start looking at the engineering type stuff. But the biggest mind bend on it all is, this is what always gets me, is because it's so hard for people to make these leaps and connections, they're so fast to debunk everything. And even the people in the ET world are so fast to debunk whatever it is. Somebody just comes out and says, oh, no, that's just a picture. And then they debunk it. And I'm okay with that, because, I mean, it's good to argue about things. But at the end of the day, when you have this many hundreds of thousands of reports and this many, you know, tens of thousands of witnesses credible, you know, hundreds of credible, like, you know, eyewitnesses and people who are telling you they're part of black budget projects, at some point you just got to say, well, let me be open to it and not debunk it all, because maybe if I debunk it, I'm actually standing on the wrong side of history at this point.
Well, that's the big shift people have to take. I mean, for you, JD, was that was it a mind bender? Did you have to stretch, or was it something you were always open to?
Well, for me, personally, and I agree with everything Amandeep just said, you know, we came into it, you know, as objective as documentary filmmakers can come into a project like this, not having an opinion necessarily that ETs are necessarily visiting this planet. I think most people will all agree at this point that, you know, there's intelligent life in the universe, because mathematically it would be almost impossible for there not to be. But in terms of, you know, being open to the subjects, I was raised in a certain way where I was kind of raised to have an open mind to things, so it wasn't hard for me to be open to the possibilities. But at the same time, as Arm alluded to, there's a line when you're making a documentary film that you have to constantly maintain an awareness of, that you don't cross, in terms of, you know, allowing yourself to become biased about the subject while you continue to research and look at the evidence. Right. But I definitely, you know, definitely open to, you know, all the possibilities, and have a mother who kind of raised me in a way that to look at the world that way. So
Right. No, we'll get into the details of the film with the examination of the mini alien. But I want to know, like, for you, JD, and then you, Armdeep, like that moment where you thought, oh, my God, this is real. So can you tell me, like, when it hit you, JD, about that?
Yeah, let me actually, and I think Arm should tell a story first because he's got a really good personal firsthand story from the first shoot that we did in Colorado that I think your viewers should hear the backstory on.
Right, because that's always the moment. It's like, okay, we're making a movie. This may or may not be real. And then, boom, it hits you. And I think it hits everyone at some point if they're investigating this kind of phenomena. So go ahead, Arm. Please tell your experience.
Well, I mean, before this, you know, we were just doing theoretical research for that script, and most of it centered around ancient alien theory and a little bit more on the ET side. And so my mind was open, and you got to remember, I come from a Sikh background, S-I-K-H, right. And we're a very Vedic tradition, so meditation was not foreign to me. And so Steve kept saying, you know, you got to come on a CE5. And I said, okay, I'll come, but the first time I do one, please, I'm not going to take my cameras. I'll bring it out the next day or something, but right now I'm not coming to photograph. I want to see if what you're saying in the meditation realm, in the meditative realm, is actually applicable. And so the first time we meditate together, it's a very beautiful group of about 15 people, some of the best people I've ever met in terms of like the clear consciousness, and you could see, you know, a beautiful aura around them. And when we got down and we started meditating, the first meditation, I kid you not, we're going right into the black void, right?
Where were you? Do you know?
Oh,
where?
Sorry. We were in Crestone, Colorado.
Oh,
we were,
okay.
And there's a little vortex there. Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful place. Has a lot of good energy. So we were in Crestone, Colorado. That's where the first shoot was for the film. And we were meditating at about, I would say it was about 11:30 p.m. that night. So we have a bunch of satellite charts and a bunch of other things, scientifically speaking. But as we're meditating, I have this experience where I'm going in the black void, and all of a sudden I get a bunch of flashing faces. Very humanoid faces, some not so humanoid, but they're looking back at me as if I'm looking in a mirror of like black, obelisk crystal or, you know, obelisk, like very black concrete, item. And all these
things. Never happened to you before, right? Never.
Never, never. Okay. I don't have visions like that, and I don't hear things in my head when I meditate. I go right into like a very harmonious meditation. And then, as I'm doing that, a voice comes in and says, are you scared? And I'm thinking to myself, okay, this might be the question of whether or not I want to make contact. So I say back to the voice, no, I'm not scared. Now, at that point in time, probably about 6 minutes left in the meditation, another little voice said to me, look up here. And so we're all in meditation, eyes closed, some of us heads up, you know, some of us not so much heads up. And I just open my eyes, because I usually meditate with my eyes closed, and I look over my right shoulder behind me. And there's a protocol that we have in the CE5 expeditions where you say the cardinal direction, you're seeing something or an anomalous thing, and you tell it what degree. So I say, everybody, do you guys see that in the south sky 35 degrees up? And here was this light getting brighter and brighter and brighter coming towards us, and it was what I would describe as it was fishtailing, meaning it wasn't in a linear path. It wasn't going straight. It was actually kind of doing an S-curve, you know, and it was going in an S-curve at about, I would say, the frequency of every 10 degrees, probably every 40 seconds, 20 seconds, it was doing like one of these S-curves. And so it's here it is. Everybody looks up and their whole, you know, the whole crowd just gasps because it's obviously not a plane. It's obviously not a satellite. It's brighter than anything else in the sky, including, you know, maybe six times as bright as a plane light. And there's no blinking lights. There's no anything. And the thing is like pulsing. And as it comes over you, you just start to feel warm, right? And that was my first experience seeing one of those. And I had no camera on. And I just looked up at it. And as soon as I saw it, I sent my like heart energy that way. Like we had been taught, like just, so, you know, send as many positive vibes that way. And as we did it, that thing kept pulsing and it would get brighter every time that we, you know, like it felt like I'd send a, you know, a love vibe. It would just get brighter. Not always when I did it, but maybe everybody in the group was sending it at the same time, you know? And so...
That's amazing. Beautiful.
Well, and then the next time, then I actually walked because I had an objective. We had another camera person across the circle. And so I walked up to her and I said, "Did you see anything before you looked up at the sky?" And she goes, "Yeah, it was in this like real weird black realm. And these bunch of these faces kept popping out at me." And I was like, "What kind of faces?" And she would describe them. And they were exactly the type of faces that I was. And I was like, "Was it like you were looking in a mirror?" And she was like, "Yeah." And I said, "What did they say to you?" And she said, "Are you scared?"
Wow.
Yeah, that's what did it for me. And I was like, okay, something's going on. Something weird is going on. And then when you watch the film, you'll actually get, the next night I came out with cameras and we again identified an amazing UFO. And we got it on camera. We got it on about 4 different cameras, different ones. We called it down, it seems like, and it's really interesting. And then we put it in the analysis of the film.
So, wait, before I get to JD, how did that shake up your world? What happened to you internally when you knew that something real was happening?
I think it's the way it shakes up everybody's world. To me, the reason people don't believe or the reason that people are very critical is because they think that they know everything. They think that they figure the whole world out and they figure the universe out. And for me, I've already come from the type of mindset that I don't think that I'm ever going to figure this thing out, but I'm going to keep searching and hopefully pass that on to my children and they're going to keep searching. And it might take us about, 9,000 generations to get somewhere. Because it's a long, long road. So for me, what it did was it reaffirmed the idea that I don't know everything. And once you have that, you can learn.
And do you think this film is sort of really the undercurrent of this film is really about that message?
It is. But part of me feels like, and JD, maybe you can speak to this more objectively. Like for me as a director, our goal was to make it so people, mainstream people go, WTF. There's anomalous things out here. I want to go research this. Then they get out of their seat and they go research people and they go research other things that have happened or things that they saw in the film and they find out more. And that's all we wanted to do was we wanted to motivate and move people out of their comfort zone.
Well, I just before JD goes on, I just want to say the world premiere of the movie will be tomorrow. I think it's a real history-making moment for our planet as people start to open their eyes. I mean, it's been around for a long time, but here's a clear, in a sense, objective view of this other reality. So the best way people can see that if they're not in Los Angeles is to order tickets online, right?
Yeah, you can order the video on demand online. You can even watch it on Facebook. We've installed, if you just Google Sirius, if you Google Sirius film, mm-hmm. you'll find about 17 channels playing it. The video on demand, we're going to do a live show, from the red carpet for about an hour before the film opens. So that's 7 p.m. Pacific time. JD, do you want to fill in all the nooks and crannies there?
Yeah, so the live stream will be available both on livestream.com as well as we'll be embedding it on some different websites. People will be able to come to sirius.neverendinglight.com where they can see the live stream of the premiere as well as, obviously that will be one portal that the VOD of the film will be hosted on, but there'll be a number of portals out there because the model that we went with for the VOD is an affiliate-based VOD model. So the idea is to give... the community the opportunity to actually help us promote this film, support the funding of the New Energy Research Lab, and also to at the same time make some money off it themselves, because it's really that community. It was a way for us to really get back to the community that helped helped us crowdfund the film and have helped build this movement over a number of years, even long before I ever set my sights on it. So exactly.
Well, there's also the website sirius.neverendinglight.com.
Absolutely. And siriusdisclosure.com. Those are the two main hubs. Sirius Disclosure is a more Steve Greer site. And then sirius.neverendinglight.com is more of our production company site. But we all value each other, and we know that you have to get on the web in multiple portals at multiple times. The reason is some people do like to suppress these types of things, and they might want to break down a website once or twice, and it's happened to us more than once. As many of the supporters know, we would show up at our Sirius.NeverEndingLight site to host the crowdfunding, and there would be porn on it. And obviously we weren't doing it. That wasn't a marketing ploy, people. That was somebody else hacking our site and taking it down. So,
well, I know. I was just interviewing Carrie Cassidy of Project Camelot a few weeks ago, and during the interview, her site went completely down. So, it happens, but it won't happen to you guys. JD, do you want to tell me your kind of awakening experience and also your relationships with Stephen Greer, the connection with him and how that happened? But just first tell me, like, that moment when you said, oh, my God, there's something here.
I mean, I think, you know, Amardeep oftentimes a hard act to follow. That's why I wanted him to go first, because his story is a little better. You know, mine is it's kind of been more of a gradual thing. When I came into this project, I was already, you know, very familiar with the sides of not only our physical world that most people choose not to see or look at, in terms of the way that our socioeconomic system is set up, politics, you know, kind of what some people would call the conspiracy theory realm, but what I think is just kind of logical fact about the nature of, you know, humans and people accumulating power, et cetera. So I was already kind of that helped me stand on kind of a base level of knowledge than to go into this particular area and with an understanding that the world is, you know, beneath the surface is a lot different than what people think that it is. And so over time, you know, we've done a lot of research, we've you know, watched more videos and other documentaries and read more articles and books and stuff than I ever thought I would on the subject. And over time, I've come to discern kind of what my own personal opinions are about, you know, the ET phenomenon and what it means for humanity. So it wasn't like one event. I actually wasn't in Colorado with them. Unfortunately, I had a camping trip with my family. But, you know, for me, it wasn't one specific event or moment as much as it was like a gradual process that happened over the course of the last year of doing this film. So it's been, and where I stand now is, you know, not entirely different than where I stood before overall, but I'm definitely, you know, a lot more aware of the evidence that exists on the, you know, for the extraterrestrial contact and some of the anomalous, you know, things that are out there in terms of witnesses and evidence and, you know, high level, very credible people that have, you know, witnessed things that are impossible to explain with, you know, conventional theories and wisdom. So that would be the best way I can summarize it. I unfortunately didn't have the UFO experience that Amardeep had. I had one when I was younger.
Oh, you did? Well, there you go.
I did. Yeah, it was a daytime thing, and I don't know. It may have been a military craft. I'm not sure. It wasn't a jet, but it was a craft came up on the horizon, and it was moving incredibly fast. But it was not making a sound, and when it passed over me, it was just like shoot, and it didn't make a noise, and it was gone. So, and it was very early in the morning, but it was, you know, at the time it was in Colorado actually as well, and there's a number of Air Force installations, you know, in Colorado. So my assumption was that it was some sort of a, you know, military technology that I hadn't encountered before, hadn't seen, which it may have been, but I didn't have the spiritual experience of Crestone. But it's been a spiritual experience, this whole project. I mean, even just going through as a company what we've gone through and having, you know, Amardeep have to endure, like, you know, the most horrendous tragedy that a human being could imagine right when you're in the middle of doing this, you know, incredibly challenging, controversial film.
Rise
to the occasion. That is, you know, that was, to me, as spiritual of experience as any, you know, UFO or ET thing, you know.
That's right. Amardeep's father was killed in the Sikh temple, the attack on the Sikh temple in India. And we don't have to go into that, but did that, I mean, if you want to talk about just how it affected your perspective on the film, Amardeep, do you feel like that? Okay.
I mean, the thing is, I mean, and it was the Sikh temple of Wisconsin attack in America.
Oh, Oh, I see.
It was in America, and what it was a neo-Nazi Ku Klux Klan member who came in with ex-military background. He was a highly professionalized person. He took a 9mm semi-automatic weapon into the temple. And I'm not trying to sound cold or callous about the situation, because it affects me, and JD knows I usually will end up crying if I talk about it too long.
Like
I did yesterday. But I'll just go into the nooks and crannies of what I think. Okay, first and foremost, it was not part of the conspiracy. We know that I have many more friends in the White House and the FBI and a number of places that have given me all the portfolios and folios on who this guy was and what he was doing there, from, you know, months before to years that he was doing awful things. But I will go into something called Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And I'm pretty sure you guys are all familiar with it, but technically speaking, there's a pyramid of whether or not you can have your basic drives met, then you can go on to the next step up this pyramid, right? And on the top of this pyramid, so the basic drives are obviously food, shelter, clothing, you know, all that good stuff. On the top of this pyramid is spirituality, God, altruism, all these amazingly beautiful things. And to be honest, that's where ETs and consciousness land. That's where new energy lands. It's in this realm of having all your other drives satisfied, your social drives, your, you know, drive to have a family, your drive to have friendships, your drive, all these environmental drives. So what happened was we were making this film serious, and we're on the top of that pyramid searching for what can help balance the universe. And then this tragedy happens to me and brings me right back to the basic drive that of life or death, existentialism at its core. And that gave me a perspective like no other as a director, because I could differentiate in a very clear, it was like a vortex that opened, and I could clearly differentiate what was truth and what was not true, you know? And the thing is, people got to understand about the internet. The internet is a place where, let's say if somebody, you know, wants to search something about breast cancer, what they're going to find is about 9 out of 10 articles that have a overtly negative impact on your outlook on breast cancer. And you're not going to be able to find the positive stuff. It's because humans at this time like to talk about very negative things. And so the same is true about consciousness or ETs, or where people go down this suppression and conspiracy hole. And I'm not saying that it's not there. I'm saying that obviously it's there. The petrodollars that exist and all these things are squishing out and squashing on a number of new energy technologies in turn, and ET, like ET presence. But at the end of the day, are we distorting the reality by amplifying the conspiracy, by literally echoing it to other people and scaring them? Like when a Boston attack happens, are we going to all just call that a conspiracy, or the Aurora happenings, or you know, what happened at the Sikh Temple, Wisconsin? Everybody just keeps grouping them into this weird giant conspiracy. And to be honest, we're doing a ton of research on violence in America right now for our next film called Nursery Crimes, and we're not finding that. We're finding that there's hardcore things that Americans do at a very young age that create a very violent tendency. And if those things were fixed, I don't know if people would react so violently when they were peeved or pissed off on the road or wherever.
Right. It's easy to call it a conspiracy and not take responsibility for the whole structure of society that creates outcasts and people who want to get back at the system or who aren't really taken care of by our society. And I think somewhere indirectly acknowledging a larger ET presence really brings the world together as a single community. I think it would have that kind of effect, hopefully, and make us share our resources and reach out to each other in ways that I think we haven't before. I mean, that's a kind of idealistic approach to ETs, but I think there is some side effect to the acknowledgement that we're part of a greater system and that we're not just a freak of nature as life on Earth, and we're part of a greater community that's waiting for us to wake up. And
you know what I think the biggest doozy of a question is, when people like to diffract the idea, or they like to take it down and, you know, tell you it's all fake, you just look at them and go, what if it is? What do we have to lose? Cost-benefit analysis, you're a rational being, let's talk about it. Like, cost-benefit analysis is if I do this research and I find that there are obviously, you know, things out there that we don't know, A, I become more humble. B, I start to search more. I try to get more intelligence in that realm. It leads me to meditation. It leads me to spirituality. It leads me to potentially finding a breakthrough in terms of our humanity. Okay, so that's the benefit. What's the cost on that? The cost is I don't watch as much TV. I mean, the cost is what's negative about that? And the same can be said about new energy technology. What's a cost benefit analysis on me searching out new technology that can be groundbreaking? So what? I mean, I spent some time to like wrap my mind around electrogravitics or, you know, mechanical magnetization or electric vortex. I'm not affecting you. I'm not hurting you by looking for this stuff. I'm not harming you. And as soon as you say that to somebody, I think they'll pause and they go, well, you know, I can't really talk to this guy about it. That's cool. Because they just want to ridicule you. And that's fine. They want to ridicule you because it makes them feel better. But overall, you just kind of stumped them by saying, hey, what's the harm in me doing this?
Well, I think people want to ridicule when they feel threatened, when their worldview feels threatened, even though this is a increase in possibility. I mean, what you said, what's the harm of sharing this? It reminds me of that place in The Life of Pi. Did you see the movie Life of Pi?
Oh, yeah.
Where, right, you're Indian. So so he tells those investigators, you know, I had this beautiful trip with this tiger and they didn't believe it. And so he makes up this other story and goes, which story do you prefer? The one with the tiger or one without the tiger? I mean, which story do you prefer? The one where the universe is full of abundant life or the one where we're all alone and some freak of nature on this little rock going through space? I mean, I prefer the story where there's an abundance of consciousness that is waiting to meet us. And it appears as if this is what we're heading into in this, I think, next phase of our history. And that's also why I feel your movie's history making. And if you want to talk about some of the other elements of the movie, like, so there's two main elements. I mean, I haven't seen the movie yet. But the one where you do the dissection on the mini ET and also the aspect of the free energy. Do you want to talk about the miniature ET and how that fits into the whole story of the film and what was that process?
Awesome. Hey, JD, do you want to take the new energy? I'll take Ada. And you want to start with new energy?
Ahead.
Yeah, start with new energy because we've touched upon that in this interview a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we set out at the beginning of this in the research, we were obviously, you know, through Dr. Stephen Greer, he's got a number of theories about the implications and the reasons behind the secrecy regarding the extraterrestrial phenomena, specifically with the United States government, the United States military. He believes that the real reasons have to do with the science and technology that are certain people in power have been able to gain from the extraterrestrial contact that's been made, you know, over the last 50, 60 years. And in essence, that's why there's so much secrecy around it. So when we set out to search this out, we were looking because there are a number of new energy inventors over time who, you know, have stories, and most of them involve suppression, sometimes violence, sometimes death. Sometimes, the NSA showing up and slapping a national security order on a device and taking the patent and telling them they can never talk about it again. Sometimes, you know, the stories go on and on, and there are a number of inventors. So we actually feature one inventor in particular in the film and one company, Morningstar Applied Physics, that's run by a few people, but one of the main key guys is a guy named Paul Mirath. He's a former Defense Intelligence Agency engineer. A guy who's actually, you know, probably been involved in some, you know, black programs or some pretty heavy stuff as well. He doesn't get into that in the film, but we focus on a device that he's developing, which the backstory is absolutely amazing. He set out to disprove John Searle's device, which a lot of people are familiar with Searle, and prove that it didn't work. And what he found was, is when he went and started building a device that was, you know, roughly to the same, you know, specs, not the exact same, but in the similar specs as John Searle, they were getting anomalous results in the data where the device was actually losing weight. and it was, and the thing is bolted down, and it's losing 7%, 8% weight, whatever the weight was in a particular test, and he could not explain the phenomenon.
So wait, did you see this? Did you actually witness this?
That was our cameras that went in there. We went into his Madison lab, and he only allows certain people into it, and nobody knows where it is, and it's high security clearance, and even Dr. Greer was not allowed in. It was just us and our cameras that were allowed in.
And so you witnessed this energy losing
It's an anti-gravity device, so it's a potential propulsion system that they're developing. We did witness it. We filmed it. We, you know, interviewed him as well as some of the other members of his team. And this is a guy that, when you interview him on other subjects, you know, around this topic, he's about as, you know, as skeptical and unbiased as you can find, or that we found in our research. And there's some other good guys in the film as well. But when it came to the secrecy stuff, he was very clear with us in other interviews. And he said, look, I can understand the logic for the U.S. government being a little concerned about, you know, say Iran or another, you know, enemy of the U.S. getting their hands on a technology that would, in essence, like trump anything that we have. So he was, you know, he wasn't necessarily agreeing with everything that Dr. Greer does or that the film does. But the point I'm trying to make is he's a very unbiased scientist that set out to disprove a phenomena and actually found that there was an anomalous phenomena that's occurring, that now they're doing further testing and they're hoping that they can develop this device so that they can develop a, you know, a radical new propulsion system that is greater than anything that exists on this planet that's in the marketplace or in the public today. And that's one example that we followed, you know, closely in the film. There's others that we followed less closely. We looked at, you know, there's a phenomenon happening all around the world where there's inventors and, you know, there's small labs and garages and wherever they can do it that are building, you know, new energy or free energy devices, zero point devices, propulsion devices. And, you know, they're posting their stuff on YouTube. They're working in an open source manner. And it's kind of a revolution that's happening that not a lot of people are aware of. So it's another part of the new energy realm that we cover. And then we definitely deal with the suppression, because there is a consistent pattern that you can see looking back in the history of free energy devices and people who have, you know, done their best to bring them out to the world, where they've been consistently suppressed by the U.S. government, you know, over time. And even sometimes some of the suppression, obviously, it's not like the U.S. government, you know, overtly doing it, but you have a guy like Eugene Molov, who was an MIT PhD and Harvard grad and, you know, had the scientific credentials that, you know, are the top of what you can imagine. And this guy had identified that there was some suppression that was happening with cold fusion and came out and blew the whistle on it, did an interview with Dr. Greer. And he was actually beaten to death on the front and inside the childhood home that he grew up in. And the guys, they ended up arresting a guy 15 years later for it, and it only gave him 15 years in jail. But it's a very, you know, it's just one story, but there's a number of stories like that over history. So those are the kind of main areas we address in terms of free energy. But there's a lot of crossover between the main topics and the subject in the ways that they all thread together, and I think that what Armadeep and our team did a great job of was creating a real, you know, bona fide narrative that ties those together in a way that, you know, no documentary that's been done on the subject yet has been able to do.
You actually saw the guy. I mean, you're convinced that he was able to make this first guy you mentioned a free energy device, and that could be mass produced, that will relieve us from the addiction to fossil fuels, oil, natural gas.
Well,
all that.
His device is not an energy device. It could be potentially, but the Searle's device supposedly was a device that had both energy and propulsion built into one unit. He's following a similar design, but his focus is more on actually trying to develop a propulsion system that would be revolutionary and unlike anything that exists in the marketplace right now. There are other people that definitely do have devices that we have seen, that other people have shown us, that I've seen video of, that people are testing. So that are real, that would have the ability to absolutely change the energy landscape that exists on our planet today.
Well, but why aren't they? Why aren't they? I mean, of course, there's the government side, but I mean, there's also a lot
It's just part of it's the normal barriers that exist to launching a new technology in general are challenging in and of themselves, let alone when there are other factors or forces that exist that are going to try to stop that progress. Because, you know, if you own a massive, you know, oil company or, you know, oil corporation, if some of these devices come out, I mean, literally, you're talking about a multi-trillion-dollar industry that will basically vanish and evaporate in a very short period of time. And by short period, I mean, it could be a decade, it could be 7 years, it could be 20 years. But for them, you know, they're fighting to hold on to the stranglehold of power that they've had over, you know, over the world for many, many years now. And even going back probably before the oil system, there's other systems that were in place that there's probably similar people that, you know, that had other forms of control. So I think that there's multiple layers to it. It's not a simple equation. And there are guys that are out there, even people that are pretty heavy hitters that do want to see this come out and that are going to begin to actually get behind some of these inventors and devices and do what they can to see them, you know, properly develop so that they can then go into the marketplace and change the world. I do believe that is going to happen. You know, the question is how quickly is it going to happen, because I believe everyone knows, especially those three of us that are on this call, but I'm sure many of your listeners know, as Arm alluded to earlier, the Earth is out of balance right now. And we have to move as quickly as possible to rectify that. And these devices and the new energy devices that are out there are definitely a key part of restoring that balance.
I mean, this is sort of a childish question, but why can't the ETs just come down and say, hey, guys, we're here and this is how we run our ships and we're giving you this technology? I think the only reason they don't do that is because a lot of people would just freak out and not be able to deal with it. I mean, but
well, also, if the U.S. military has been shooting them down,
right,
then why would they be wanting to come down here if we're like this? You know, we're like this infantile race of intelligent humans that, you know, haven't shown the capacity that we're ready for that.
Yeah.
I mean, these technologies, as much as they, just like even, you know, Einstein and other people's, you know, breakthroughs in science that were used to create nuclear bombs, these technologies can be most likely be used for, you know, the most benevolent means or the most malevolent means you can imagine. So if these devices or these technologies are harnessed improperly with the wrong intentions, I mean, why would you do that? Why would you give that to a race of humans that's being led or that's being controlled or run by, you know, a group that seems hell-bent on, you know, on power and holding power and on being violent?
Well, definitely, I mean, we have to evolve as a planet.
It doesn't make logical sense, you know?
Yeah, it's like fire, you know? Fire is a great tool, and it's also a great destructive tool. It's the same place we're in as a human race. Which way do we go when we receive a technology? You know, it also reminds me a little bit of the themes in Thrive. What was your connection to that movie? They talk about ETs, they talk about these energy devices. I mean, I know you take off on a whole different tangent, but some of the elements of this film remind me of Thrive.
Well, you know, the thing with Thrive is an amazing movie, and Foster Gamble is an amazing person. The things that make us different, the way we conceptualize and handle the concept of putting all of this narrative in one brisk film. And we don't go too far down rabbit holes of talking head interviews. And I'm not saying anything wrong about Thrive. I'm just saying it's a difference in a style, because we're filmmakers. Our job is to make narrative. Our job is, obviously, we stay objective, we're documentarians, and we don't cross that line, and we don't interject into the narrative. And in that case, that special case of Thrive, it was great, because it was a film by a person who was part of the movement. In our case, it's very much not like that. Dr. Greer is not the filmmaker. Dr. Greer is not, he is somebody that we follow in the film alongside 20 other amazingly intelligent and beautiful people. So, and by the end of it, you'll get done with the film and you'll go, oh my God, there was something like 95 to 100 people on the film screen. And that's going to impress you, because the humanity just pops out at you.
So tell me about, like, probably one of the peaks of the film is when you find this little alien body. Can you talk about that whole series of events and what happened and what we should see, what we will see in the movie?
Absolutely. We can talk about that. I think that the best place to start is Dr. Greer, about a year and a half back, got hold of this being and was able to hold it himself before he ever met us. Then later, because of our crowdfunding and our crowdsourcing, which now, just to let you guys know, we've completely retooled or created a whole new paradigm for making film. In less than a year, we crowdfunded $500,000, $250,000 of those dollars went to making the film, and the rest of the money was left over to handle press, marketing, just a ton of other things that come up with this type of stuff, like legal battles and stuff like that, licensing footage, all this other stuff. Anyways, we made it a whole new paradigm because as soon as we needed to go out there and try to get a bone specimen of this being or be able to at least film this being so we could have it in our film, we went back out to the crowd and told them, hey guys, we're in a bit of a jam. We've maxed out all our budget, but we need an extra boost in order to do this. So we started showing the pictures around, and you'll see a couple of update videos, and you'll understand exactly where we did that kind of stuff. Now, it was amazing because we got over there. In our crowdfunding, a geneticist from a high top-ranking university heard about this agenda of ours, this program of ours to go find Atta and get a sample of him.
Why do you call him Atta? Why is that name?
The little specimen comes from the Atacama Desert, and he was formerly known as the Atacama specimen or something like that. We've renamed it to the Atacama humanoid.
Where is the Atacama Desert?
Absolutely. It's in Chile.
Okay.
It's in Chile. And when the local digger found him or archaeologist found him, they actually started using him as a almost like a circus item. People would pay $5 to go see this little alien being and take pictures with it. And then later, a man from Spain that we can't name
it's okay.
Formally, but he ended up purchasing the Atacama humanoid from that person and then took it back to Spain and put it in an institute, which we do get to name. So you'll see that at the end of the credits, and you'll see that as, when you're watching the film. And that institute is holding the being, and it's not really letting it out to anybody. So Steve, because he's a medical doctor, and because we have this geneticist on board who's with a high-ranking top university, and because we have the money in our hand to do this, this institute opens up their books and allows us to come in and take some samples. And we had to pay some money for that, but at the end of it, we took those samples to this top-ranking geneticist at this university. Multiple different professors and doctors came to look at the x-rays, the MRIs, the bone calcification, the rib count. There's just so many anomalous things about this one specimen that it starts to drive on you. Now, of course, we don't want to give away the ending of the film because we launch and we tell you the results. And we're going to put an infographic up, and we're going to put a ton of open source stuff out, including the geneticist findings. We're going to put all the DNA analysis up online.
Can you tell me what you saw looking at, like the shape, the size, what you saw looking at this little specimen?
The first thing that will strike you, it's 13 centimeters long, which is about 6 to 7 inches. Its bones are calcified. It's not a, it's not something where the bones aren't like stuck together. According to JD, you were on with the last producer's call. How much can we let out? Do you want to let some stuff out of the bag?
Oh yeah. I mean, especially that we can at this point disclose the name of the university where the testing was done.
So the name of the university is Stanford University.
Okay, California.
California, one of the highest ranking universities in the world. Especially what we have is we have one of the chairs of the stem cell research department in the medical facility. So he's so well versed in DNA and genetics. He's one of the top five in the world, it looks like. And also, and I say five, I mean, it could be top 15. Don't quote me on that. Okay. And he took the DNA analysis. We got so much DNA out of the little bone marrow that fragment that we took that we were able to do 4 different tests, 3 different facilities, all with the highest ranking people in the world. We've gotten cross matches on almost everything that we've, he's foolproofed it. There is no, I mean, he talks about it in the film. He's like, there's no, this is an absolute result. The stuff that I'm getting is absolute. And he tells you just a slew of things that make this little specimen very anomalous. And that's the word we're going to use. It's very anomalous, you know?
Okay. You don't want to tell us at this point if this like really pushed you over the edge of
it definitely pushed me over the edge. I mean, I was already over the edge, but I mean, it took me to a place where now I envision so many more different things. And maybe that's the big result. The big result is my paradigm has shifted in my head by being there. But I also think it's going to shift in a lot of people's heads. Now, what we did in the film, and some people might like it or might not like it, because we're objective filmmakers, we have to go with the science and we have to stop at some point. Like we can't, you know, go crazy and announce, oh, you know, this thing. Right now,
right, you can't come to conclusions. You have to just present the evidence and let people draw their own conclusions. Right
now, what he's asking for, and maybe what I would love to announce on this radio station, is he's looking for more specimens of this type to keep sampling. Like he's spent a lot of his own money in order to buy the special equipment, and people keep asking, like, why didn't we do this before? Well, the equipment only came out, I mean, several months before we used it.
Who's that who's looking to buy the equipment? Which person?
Oh, sorry. No, the Stanford geneticist.
Oh, I see.
Is looking. He's not looking to buy it. He's already bought it. He spent his own money to buy it. He's saying right now I've set up the scientific protocol and the, you know, I've set up everything for anybody else who has specimens. Bring them my way and I will try to find, you know, if there's matches in this anomalies.
Well, of course, the U.S. government has these bodies that they've been keeping since Roswell, I'm sure. You know, the FBI has documents about that. So.
Quite possibly. And they don't like crowdfunding, as last time.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But, I mean, this thing has totally changed my viewpoint. I mean, J.D., how is it for you?
No, I mean, it's definitely the main thing, like already said, is that we've actually taken something that is anomalous that people will argue and debate over, which they'll continue to argue and debate over, and we've subjected it to, you know, the highest level of scientific rigor possible to actually come up with the data to ascertain what's going on. Obviously, there is no ET, you know, DNA database to compare it to, but what we can look for is the differences that we see between the DNA of the specimen and that of a human being or other, you know, biological beings on this planet or biological species. So, you know, but that is really the key of what I think great and wonderful about what we've been able to do with the help of, you know, some of the key people in that part. And it's definitely, you know, it's a fascinating thing because it opens up a lot of deeper questions, which to me are really at the root of the interest in the ET phenomenon, or knows kind of where I stand on this. It's, you know, I think most people are interested in it because it gets at the fundamental root of some basic questions that humans have had for, you know, as long as humans were able to think the way that we think now, which is where do we come from? How do we get here? You know, what is our existence on this planet?
So and are we alone, right?
Yeah.
Well, and the funny thing is, I mean, we know that we're not alone, especially given the dynamics of the sentient beings that we already know about, like us, the different races of humans, you know? And then you go even farther, like, it's Drake's equation. I mean, it's 99.999999 to the 19th power. That there are other civilizations in this universe. So we're just wondering if they can traverse space and time. And what's cool is, like, remember it goes back to that cost-benefit analysis. God, like, does it really hurt us to imagine that there could be a civilization that traverses space and time and maybe we should consider it?
Right. I just read a mind-blowing statistic that there are more stars in the sky than all the grains of sand and all the beaches of the world. I mean, how? Just think of that. Just think of how abundant possibility is. And, of course, like I've had my own experiences. I've seen those lights in the sky. I've had those kind of inner mind visions of beings. I've had dreams where I had encounters. I don't know if it was abduction, but I know it's real. But I also feel part of the collective mindset that's struggling to make this tipping point a possibility within the collective psyche. And I think maybe this film could, well, definitely add to it, but do you think this could be the tipping point, or do you think we're going to have to chew on this for, you know, another dozen years?
I mean, I personally think we are at the crux. I think that this is going to be a big shift. I'm very hopeful. What we're thinking, JD and I are thinking, and the team at Sirius is, we want, obviously, everybody who's been involved in this to watch this, but we want to net a whole new type of crowd. Maybe a 17-year-old kid in high school is going to watch this, and it's going to blow his mind, and he's going to go, I'm going to study Maxwell's equation and see what's wrong with it. Or maybe there's going to be a 22-year-old person or a 23-year-old person that goes, you know what, let me go look at this meteor shower tonight. Oh, my God, what is that up there? You know, or, you know, and it's just becoming, if we can get more people out there experiencing and living life, I think that more will actually understand the natural laws that exist out there.
So how are you reaching that mainstream crowd? Of course, everyone in this community and probably a lot of people listening are already aware of that. But how are you branching into the mainstream, into the mainstream media as well?
Well, I personally, JD, can I answer this one? Or do you want to do the distribution?
Course. No, okay. No, take it.
So for me, the idea is we have a core of very savvy, initiative-driven people that crowdfunded this film. There's people such as yourself. And what we created was an affiliate distribution model, which anybody here can get paid money for distributing Sirius. You get a dollar for every time somebody else streams it from a link that you send out. You can send it out on Facebook. You can send it out on email. You can install the VOD player, the video on demand player, like Netflix, on your Facebook account. And if people watch it there, you get a dollar. But not only that, the idea was to spread it far and wide so nobody can knock it down. Nobody can cut the 1,000 trees of websites that are going to have this up on Monday night. So we're hoping that everybody goes out and signs up as an affiliate. You can go to SiriusDisclosure.com. You can go to Sirius.NeverendingLight.com. You can Google Sirius Film, and you'll find the correct link that you need to go to. And then all you do is sign up as an affiliate, get your link, set up your little bank account that lives there, and you can see the money rolling in. And we are the first, I believe we're the first ever, in terms of film and entertainment companies that was fully funded by the people. We made the film through the people. Like, we asked people to come into the film that were funders, just so we could, you know, they could send us energy devices, or they could send us, you know, their own experiences. But also, we're the only film that's now sent it back out to the people and said, could you help distribute for us, and you'll get paid for it. No other film is doing that ever.
By the people, of the people, and for the people, really, that you're doing this.
Exactly.
Well, so I think everyone listening to this program should definitely sign up to the affiliate and send it out to all your friends that are ET agnostic or even never considered the idea of possibilities of life on other planets. Because like you said, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, so many people are just struggling for survival. They never have time to look beyond that to say, hey, there's a bigger picture here. But I think as we come together as a whole planet, unified in awareness and resources, we can start to raise all of us up to these higher levels of what we're really here for, which is to share our creative gifts. And so
you couldn't have said it better. Now I'm going to put you on the spot, Alan.
Okay, so you can.
My spot is, are you going to become an affiliate for us?
Oh, absolutely. I did.
Awesome.
Absolutely. I'll put it on my website, put it on my Facebook. I'll send it out to my whole 25,000 email list of a bunch of people. So
awesome.
How long will this film be there? So it's opening April 22nd on demand. How long will that run for people to watch it?
It's going to run for, I mean, just like Disclosure Project did, we're going to keep it running as long as we can keep it running in terms of months. And we're going to The next step is to do theatrical screenings. We're going to be opening some in Los Angeles. We got some firm offers internationally that we're weighing out. And the idea is to get it out on theatrical screening, to get it out on DVD, to get collector's edition DVDs out, to get video on demand out, to allow the people to set up their own screenings and be able to like send them the file to screen with. And it's a vast array of distribution. And we wanted to do that because we want the most people to watch this film. Now, there is the knock on us. There is consistently the knock that, oh, you know, if you wanted everybody to watch it, why wouldn't you just put it on YouTube? And people got to comprehend, people don't watch two-hour films on YouTube all that often unless you have some way of watching it. But on top of that, it really devalues your credibility. So if you're sending out a film for free, every marketing and press person in the world knows that most of the mainstream will then write it off as that's not a valuable film. These guys are just BSing us.
Right. Plus you want to make some money back. I mean, you put a lot of work into this. I mean, how long was it, like a 2-year project or?
No. We did the whole thing within a 12-month window and definitely we want to make obviously our money back in terms of our production company. But the other major thing is any revenue that we do make is all being used to start a new energy lab in Virginia. Dr. Greer is going to be one of the people on the board. We talk about it in the film very briefly. This is because we didn't want to, you know, propagandize the situation. But he's going to start a new energy lab. It's going to be an open source lab. It's a beautiful lab. It's going to have mini web cameras everywhere throughout the lab so nobody can suppress anything. It's going to be open source, meaning that anything that is invented in that lab will be given to the public domain ASAP without needing to apply for patents or anything like that. It will just be given out. And so obviously our production company wants to make our money back because, I mean, we've spent a year and many extra dollars making sure that this film would be the best that we could be.
No, I'm very happy you did. One more question before you go is that, you know, next week, April 29th to May 3rd, Stephen Bassett from the Paradigm Research Group is hosting a series of citizens' hearings about the ET presence, the UFO truth embargo. Are you connecting with that at all?
JD, you want to jump in and tell them about that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, we're good. We're good friends with the guys putting that together, Ruben Langdon, Just Cause Entertainment. Right. Stephen Bassett, Paradigm Research Group. Right. We're definitely looking. We've been working with them and collaborating and cross pollinating the marketing pushes to try to help them and in turn, you know, help the community. You know, just make sure that everyone's aware of the great event they're doing there. We're actually also going to be screening the film on the evening of the first day of the hearings at the National Press Club.
Oh, you are, and Stephen Greer will be there. I heard.
And Stephen Greer is one of the key witnesses on. Multiple panels, I believe, that are, you know, he's going to be speaking multiple days there. So it's definitely a great event they put together. And, I'm hoping that it's really successful for him.
Well, it just kind of fits in. It's interesting timing. Here's your film being released, and here's this big hearing in Washington where people are coming forward and saying, yes, there's an ET present. It seems like a lot of things are conspiring to just put this subject on the table on the front page. You know, I mean, every couple of years it surfaces and then it drops out of sight, but maybe this time people will pay more attention. And thank you for doing
well, the film will go further than one news story or one thing, because that's the beauty of film. As a medium, is that it can carry on and live on for years and decades and generations. So I think the ripple effect of what this film will do in terms of opening minds and changing perceptions about a number of things, including the ET phenomenon and the reality of our universe and that we live in, I don't think that's going to be something that's short-lived. I think it's something that's going to continue to grow and expand in terms of the people that it influences and hopefully changes and it inspires to do great things and like Omar Deep said, to go out and investigate and to do the research. So,
great. Maybe we'll. Do you guys want to stick around? I was going to add one of the people in the film, Gus Marcrius. You want to just talk about, introduce him and tell him about his kind of role in this film?
Hello.
Costa. Okay, we're just going to be introduced by the producer or director. You want to tell people who we're talking to now?
Yes, this is Costa McCreese from etletstalk.org.
Okay, and Armdeep, you want to talk about how Costa is connected to the film? Did we lose those guys?
Armdeep, are you there?
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. I put the mute button on for a second.
Oh, no.
Costa is an amazingly beautiful human being, and he runs etletstalk.org, and they have, I mean, thousands of CE5 circles all around the world that communicate together and create synergy. And when he shows up in the film multiple times, one is to talk about the contact experience and how to make it happen, and then the other time is when he talks about using the internet for its very powerful means of connecting to a number of different people. And overall, I think Costa is an amazing person. He also helped usher and create a CE5 experience for the end of the film where our narrator throughout the film, Thomas Jane, who's an actor who usually would never come out on this type of stuff, meaning, you know, he's a Hollywood actor. He played the Punisher. He starred in the HBO show called Hung. He came to that, and we all did a CE5 contact experience as a never-ending like group, and Costa helped head that up. And I'm so excited to be working with Costa, and I'm so glad you could make it to the call.
Great.
I am too.
Wait, Costa, Armadeep talked about his CE5 experience, but we didn't really talk about the nature of that. Do you want to talk about what Stephen Greer created and what the CE5 experiences are?
Yes. These are what are called protocols, and that's a fancy word for just the name of a process, some simple instructions that allow ordinary, everyday people, when they follow them, to actually make contact with these advanced interstellar civilizations. Dr. Greer introduced the CE5 protocols way back in the day and before the turn of the century as part of his CSETI program, and he has been teaching them to people all over the world since then. I got introduced to them in 2006 when I went to my very first training with Dr. Greer for a week at Mount Shasta. And using those protocols along with 40 or 50 other people out there in the field yielded some amazing results night after night of different kinds of ET contact.
I just want to say goodbye to Amardeep. He has to run. He's the director. It's a big opening day tomorrow. JD, if you want to stick around, that's great. But I'll continue the conversation with Costa. Thanks, and again, to see the film, go to Sirius.NeverEndingLight.com for the big opening screening. Become part of the affiliate program, send that out to your friends, and let's make this film really be seen in a mainstream way because it's an important moment in our collective history.
Thank you so much, Alan. And just one quick announcement before I leave. Everybody on Sirius.NeverEndingLight.com, on Sirius Disclosure, we are going to play a one-hour premiere live stream of the red carpet event. So the people showing up, there'll be interviews with Steve Bassett, there will be interviews with Steve Greer, there'll be interviews with all the celebrities that are showing up in Los Angeles. We wanted to make sure that everybody out there who helped support this film could feel as if they were at the premiere, no matter how much they funded. So please check that out on our websites.
Is that like a free streaming event, you're saying?
Yes, absolutely. It'll be a live stream. You could stream it on your cell phones. You could stream it on Facebook. You could stream it. We'll set up all the links and put it out there in the world. And remember, just Google Sirius Film and you'll always get the update.
And you can watch the actual opening red carpet events at neverendinglight.com.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's good luck with everything. I hope it's, just an amazing hit.
Thank you guys so much, Costa. Have a good time. Talk to you soon, Alan.
Thank you. Thank you. Talk
to you. Thanks, Alan.
Okay, JD, just before you say goodbye, do you want to just tell us what your role was exactly as producer?
My role as producer was to do a lot of things, man. The typical stuff that lead producers do on a film in terms of managing, everything from, physical production, shoots, manage, helping to set up distribution, helping to you know, also helping on the creative side and conceptualizing the film and working with Omar Deep on that, which was part of the experience I, you know, probably enjoyed the most. And, you know, everything across the board, I mean, that's kind of the nature of the role of the producer is you know, really to handle all that, to handle not only, like, the business and the logistical side of filmmaking, but also to dive into the creative side wherever necessary to make sure that the film is as good as it can be.
Are you really happy with the finishing product?
Oh, absolutely. If you asked me a month ago, ironically enough, I would have said I was, you know, I was pretty happy. But right now, like in the last month, we've really ratcheted it up even further. And I feel like by itself as a documentary, regardless of the subject matter it's covering, it's a high quality, you know, great documentary that I think everybody can enjoy and get something out of, whether you're initiated into the, you know, the ET world or you're not. So.
Right. Well, thanks so much for putting your energy and attention to this subject. I mean, it's a subject that I feel really close to and probably the most important wake-up call as far as getting people to understand new realities are just knocking at our door. So we'll be in touch. J.D. Serafini?
Yeah, J.D. Serafini. Yeah, you were close.
Okay. Thanks, J.D., for being on the program.
All right, thanks, Alan. Thanks, Costa.
Thank you.
Okay, Costa, it's just me and you now. But
okay.
But I do want to get, like, you. So you were saying that Stephen Greer started this. Really, it's and I have friends who've been out there. He takes people out to a kind of wilderness area that possibly is a known UFO sighting place, like Crestone or maybe Sedona or some places in Virginia even, and or Mount Shasta. I think I have friends who've been there. And he has a protocol that people can follow where they can start to make contact with the intelligences that live out there. Do you want to go through that protocol and just kind of outline what people do when, of course, it's different. They're just here listening to their computer or something. But what exactly, how do they tap into that realm? How did Greer create that?
Yeah, he well, in his book Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge, he tells his life story and how he came to be doing this work. So I would encourage people to check that out and learn about his path and where these protocols came from. What I can speak to is the fact of how simple they are to use. The let me just say that the underlying approach is, if a person has a peaceful, loving, goodwill intention towards the ETs and the ET contact, I believe that to be utterly fundamental to initiating the contact and keeping it going, no matter what protocol you might use that you would come up with, whether it's a C5 or something else. If you're full of fear, negativity, extreme skepticism, hostility, or just really kicking tires and don't really care about it, but it's kind of like, prove it to me type of attitude, my guess, and from my experience, chances are you won't make contact, because these civilizations that are visiting here are not only technically advanced to ours, but they're also very spiritually advanced. They are in states of evolution that's beyond ours, where they're not fighting anymore. They're practicing joy and love and peace, something that human beings as a whole are still aspiring to. Therefore, if you approach them as a human being wanting to make contact, with the kinds of, you know, shall we say, vibrations or attitude that is not at least open and wanting to be loving and expecting the best of both of the parties, then again, you're probably going to fail. So let me just say that you start with that. Now, as far as the protocol, there are you can go into meditation or, you know, prayer. Dr. Greer leads meditations where he puts people into a deep state of what he calls non-local mind. And that is just that state where everything is one and you feel it interconnected. And even if you're not an experienced meditator, there's always a place to start, you know, again, with your sincere intention and quieting your mind and sitting down and declaring your intention. What we do with our groups that we coordinate every month at etletstalk.org is we also ask each person to link heart to heart, you know, with the group there that's local to them, you know, whether it's in their living room or out in the field. and also to visualize all the other groups out in the world as a vast network of light and link with them so that this huge, wide field is created of loving intention and an open desire for contact. And so the group then becomes far more powerful than any individual. The ETs can tune into this. They know that. They're aware of people who are trying to make contact. They're aware of our groups every month that go out. And they're aware of just anybody who goes out in their backyard on any given time and uses this protocol to approach them. So in a state of this deep relaxation and non-local mind, there is a visualization where you can send out a beam of light from your heart or from your location out into space and send it as a welcome, as a beacon to those civilizations that can pick it up. And they will. And you can sometimes, if you use remote viewing, maybe even make contact to where you see or feel or hear where they are. You can use a Google Earth type approach where you can see the Milky Way, the solar system, our planet, and then from space zoom in to where your location is, as if you were flying over the Earth and kind of zooming down the way you might do on a Google map when you want to get close down to the street level. And if you use that visualization kind of approach to show where you are, and you don't have to be an expert or really good at this, but the pictures that you paint of where you are certainly help. And
wait. So let me just see if I follow this. So every month people go out, or they do it on their own from their homes? Is that what? Or they go out someplace to a location?
They're not limited to that. What I was describing about the monthly thing is an effort called the Global CE5 Initiative that I started with Dr. Greer's support back in October 2010. So we've gathered individuals in scores of countries who do join once a month, usually on a Saturday close to near a full moon so that the sky is dark, and we link up with each other. We coordinate during a 24-hour period this approach. But that doesn't mean you have to wait for that one day a month that we do it. If you know something about these protocols the way I'm describing them, you can do it anytime, anywhere that you feel comfortable and safe, any day of the week. And we encourage people, aside from the one day a month, to always be thinking of trying to make their contact whenever it's convenient for them. But at the very minimum, this once a month coordination is something really special, where all the groups that we have on etletstalk.org try to get together and represent kind of the one humanity, where we really coordinate in thought and word and intention and show the ET civilizations that we're on the vanguard of this people's movement of contact, and that we want to be contacted as a group or as individuals. And I'll tell you, whether it's during this once-a-month thing or whether you're using the protocols at other times on your own, you will get contact eventually if you continue and practice with sincerity, because the ETs have told us through telepathic contact that they're eager and joyous to find peaceful human beings. As we know, there are forces on Earth that have been covering up the ET presence for many reasons that Sirius will delve into when you see the movie, and I encourage people to see it. And by the way, you can also stream the movie on etletstalk.org.
Okay, just let me ask you, I appreciate, first of all, everything you're doing to raise the consciousness of the people on the planet here, but that seems to be the big split between in the UFO community, mm-hmm. the split between the craft sightings, well, they're a real concrete metal or some type of alloy type of substance these crafts are, and then there's the consciousness level of the ET presence, and there seems to be two different camps as far as, you know, the UFO research in that way. And I mean, these ETs that you're connected with, they don't necessarily have to have a craft if you're already making telepathic communication. So how do you talk to that other crowd?
Well, for one thing, we don't make a distinction between the two crowds.
Right. Okay.
To us, contact is contact, whether they're in a metallic craft or some trans-dimensional, ultra-physical, light kind of ship. That's a sentient being in its own way. There are many civilizations out there, at many different levels of evolution. Some may be tens of thousands of years ahead of us, some may be a million years. They're going to have different technologies. So for our purposes, we don't enter that particular debate. It's a reasonable debate, I'm not judging it, but I'm just saying we're just going to make contact. I mean, if you arrive in a shopping cart or in an interstellar craft, if you're ET and really wanting to do this, then you know, our groups are there to make that contact. The ETs will find a creative way to contact us. It's not always about a sighting in the sky in a craft, no matter how really cool that is, and it is.
Well, maybe that is, though, what they are waiting for. I mean, I'm just talking philosophically that they're waiting for us to wake up our telepathic skills in order to really show up, because from everything I've read, that is actually how they communicate, and they may come and go in their crafts, but real contact could be made, and by what you're doing exactly. I mean, that is contact.
Yes, and you're really spot on. Thank you for enunciating that, because I couldn't have said that better myself. This is really about consciousness. It's about our evolution meeting them halfway, showing that on a physical level, we can get along as human beings. We can apply goodwill and love and learn to get along, and then raise our, not only our individual, but our collective vibrations to meet these civilizations who have reached those stages and have gone out to the stars. They're willing to meet us halfway with that and help us move even further. So I agree with you. It's important to increase our own spiritual growth by whatever means we believe that to be, and that is our belief system, and to approach them with it, and then they'll meet us halfway. They've told us that.
Well, John Mack, you know, the Harvard psychiatrist, who is really one of the most important UFO researchers I think we've had in our history, because he was a psychiatrist. He was a professor at Harvard, and he wrote the book Abductions. One of the things he said is that the UFO is the universe's way of reaching out to the consciously impaired earthlings. You know? So, but
I love, you know, that.
yeah, it's an outreach program for the consciously impaired. That's what he said. But the other aspect of that is, what about the whole abduction scenario? Where, I mean, I have my own theories, is that, you know, people have been frightened, and genetics specimens have been taken, and it's quite a frightful experience. No one that I know has ever been actually harmed, but they have been implanted, and that's a whole other end to the friendly, nice ET, oh, you know, they're here, welcome.
Well, please understand, if they had the technical means, the technologies to get through interstellar space or to use ultra-dimensional physics or whatever, if they really wanted to destroy us, this is my belief, take our gold, take our women, take our men, take our shiny little trinkets, whatever they might think they fancy, they would have done that long ago in mass numbers and enslaved us. We would not be breathing the free air of Earth, and I'm using a phrase there from Dr. Greer, which I like, that phrase. Again, my personal belief, many people in our network, most have not reported negative experiences. And in fact, the resistance that people say they run into, if they run into it, is from the covert projects. Dr. Greer talks about that. A lot of his witnesses have come from those where they have staged abductions. They have reverse engineered the ET technologies to make metal nuts and bolts type of craft themselves. They have fleets of these. Senator Daniel Inouye testified before a congressional subcommittee, I think a decade ago, that there was an Air Force and a Space Force that was above governments that was out there operating, and it's with reversed engineering technology. We have heard about that.
I believe that.
So there, it's there, and I think people honestly have more to fear. If you want to be in fear, fear the humans.
Mm-hmm.
Fear,
right.
Fear the puppet masters, fear whatever you want to call them, who are pulling the strings and who have used the media and Hollywood to cover up the truth, who have threatened inventors of free energy, confiscated their inventions, and have kept us fighting wars with each other over territory, over resources, over oil, and kept us on fossil fuels. If you want to fear, and I'm not claiming you should do that, I'm saying right. You should have courage and rise above it, fear them instead and then get up and do something about it. And that's why at etletstalk.org, we're tired of waiting for governments to disclose, even though a few of them have opened up UFO files, as I'm sure you know, on their websites, which has been a great step forward, and that's to be lauded. Right. But for the great, you know, the great announcement or the great landing on the White House lawn that they're going to announce, et cetera, don't wait for governments. We the people have to take our power back. We have to understand, and we will through Sirius, how we've been lied to, how the truth has been covered up in order to keep us off of free energy and keep us in the oil game, in the war game. And as someone said, I've heard this attributed to different people, but the quote is, the truth shall set you free, but first it will piss you off.
Right. I've heard For that. Those,
of course, I think it's been bandied about, and I still love it, no matter how many times I hear that.
Right. But, you know, I don't want to avoid the abductee subject, because I think it's a real one. I think I possibly have had those experiences. I know other people have. And I think there's many ideas about that. There could be a different race of ETs, the little gray beings that need our genetics, that aren't necessarily bad or evil, but they've reached the end of their evolutionary line. And now they can create incredible technology, but they can't create life as we know it. And they need human genetics in order to propagate their species and evolve them to the next level. I mean, that's my hypothesis. There's no way of proving that, but I think it's an aspect of the whole field that I think needs to be included in the subject if we're going to look at the way out subject of ET visitations. You know, that's just one aspect. I don't know how you feel about that. I'm not saying there aren't, they're not, they're here for a good reason, because I think they are here for a good reason. I think their presence is shocking, and part of the ways they go about contacting people, especially when they are looking for the genetics, can be traumatizing. So where do you stand on that?
I personally don't have any experience with such, and I don't know people that do. So I cannot be a judge and tell other people, no, you didn't experience something. I'm not going to do that. If they say they were abducted, obviously that was a real experience to them. What I am saying is we do have evidence that human projects have staged abductions of not only everyday people, I was almost said normal people, I meant everyday people, but also of leaders of nations in order to instill fear in them so that they could create, for example, a Star Wars program and spend trillions of dollars with weapons partly pointing to outer space, not just towards Earth. There's a hidden agenda there to those kinds of abductions. And people have come forward and said that they were part of those projects, that mm-hmm. stagecraft.
Oh, really? So, who came forward? I'm just curious.
Dr. Greer has some witnesses. I don't remember the names now, but if you go to disclosureproject.org, he has a wealth of material there. About people who talk about their Black Project experience.
Now, well, I definitely believe in Black Projects, the underground. Yeah, I mean, I definitely believe the government is keeping.
So I can't speak to the whole spectrum if there are other races. I don't believe there are. Now, that doesn't mean to say that in this great universe, and they're hypothesizing now that there are billions of planets out there. This is just recent news.
Oh, sure. It has to be, right?
Civilizations that are as kind of crappy as ours and haven't gotten it right yet? You bet. There must be. Have they been allowed to go in space by other civilizations who see that there's a problem with them doing that? Probably not. But I don't know. It's a big, wide universe. I just know what's going on here on Earth, and there are human beings oppressing other human beings and lying to us and faking things like abductions. And that has to not only stop, we have to get past that as best as we can. For those people who've had negative experiences, my heart goes out to you. I don't know who did that to you, but I'd be willing to bet there were some human beings behind it, and that's just my personal opinion.
Well, I don't know. I don't think I really agree with the military abduction stuff. I think maybe the military could have been actually as deluded as some of the humans involved in the sense of participating in this and may not actually, I mean, of course, one level of the military might know, but I think what's been called, I guess, my lab abductions, I don't know how real those are from my research. But, you know, something is happening, and I think the ET problem is a lot more complex than just like saying they're here. You know, I think it involves many, many levels of consciousness. I think interacting, whether you're a contactee, as in the SC5 programs going out there, that's sort of a contacting, or whether you think you've had some genetic material used in some kind of experiments. I think on all those levels, there's a state of consciousness that is about something non-ordinary. You know, there's a non-ordinary awareness that we are evolving towards. Do you know what I'm saying? It's these ETs, whoever they are, wherever they're from, don't exist in the same state of mind that humans exist in. And there's an awakening that has to happen in us to start to reach them, not just telepathically, but in common discourse. Does that make sense?
I totally agree about that, because that's what the state that ETLetsTalk.org was born in, and our mission is to take the fear out of the masses of making contact. Don't, if you do believe in the negative ET thing, don't bring it to ETLetsTalk.org, please, because you can believe what you want, but our community is in the positive state of mind, raising our vibrations, approaching with joy and love. And that, to me, is a guarantee that if there are negative entities out there, whether they're ETs or astral or whatever from Earth, we're protected from that. We start from the premise of the light and move forward from that, and we will, like will attract like, light will attract light. And we have the reports to prove that.
Well, I just want to say, I don't think the abductee experience is necessarily a negative ET experience. I think if it's happening, I think it's actually a contribution to the evolution of life everywhere. And it may seem like a traumatic experience only because people have encountered beings different than themselves, but I don't think those beings are necessarily negative or evil, but they are in need of something we human beings have, which is our ability to feel. And this is just my theory, and maybe others, about our humanity, our compassion, our love. That is what's missing, I think, in some of these ET races, and that is why they're looking to us to start to integrate those just DNA awarenesses into a race so it can evolve to a place of compassion, at least talking about the grays that I've researched. So I don't think it's negative. I think people can interpret it that way, but overall it's for the evolution of consciousness throughout the universe. Let's put it that way.
Well, consciousness does find every way possible to evolve itself, and that much I'll agree. And I've lived long enough to know that I don't know everything and can't know all the possible ways that that consciousness would do that. What I have to, at the end of the day, focus on is, at least in my little corner of the world, in the corner of our little website and in our growing community, is to at least use one approach that we know works, that keeps us together as a community, that gives us a secure place to be, and to contact like-minded ET civilizations. If there are ones out there who are doing the kinds of abductions you talk about, which may not be necessarily negative, we've not run into that. But let me just say that there are reports from our field groups that at times in lucid dreams, or even maybe physically, they may have been taken aboard a craft, and it wasn't a frightening experience. Maybe it was a confusing one. So I'm not saying that these things don't happen. I just really doubt whether the real negative aspect of that, the fear, is really necessary.
Well, I think the fear, though, is exactly what you say. The fear is not that they're evil. The fear is that we are confronting something we don't know. And I think
Yeah.
That's the big thing. That it's not, I don't believe in good and evil, all that stuff. It's, that's kind of a, just mm-hmm. one. How do we introduce, like, the planet itself is in fear because of government controls and propaganda on television. I mean, we right. are fed fear in the movies. So when we're faced with the unknown, like if you were out on your own and looking at these stars and there was a, something started moving and it's moving towards you and you see, I mean, most people unprepared would be in fear because they don't know it.
Oh, I get your drift there. Yeah, yeah. Fearing the unknown is just, is very human. But from fear, if you have the courage to move into interaction and knowledge, and then there's a chance for joy and love to happen. If you stay in fear, you're going to stay in fear and maybe even regress. So I get your point. There will be the first time experience, you are maybe fearful. I'll tell you what, when I first went on my first training for a week with Dr. Greer, there was an element of me, because I had read about UFOs as a child. I was very fascinated. And I had read, you know, the usual kinds of negative experiences that were there. So there was a corner of me that felt that. So I'm not saying I'm above it, but I confronted that and said, you know, okay, you've got your place. You stay over there. You the fear. And I'm still going to go for a week and I'm going to see for myself whether you're real or whether there's something greater that's real, more real than the fear is. And I had a fabulous week of contact, of very loving interaction, and that fear disappeared.
Well, I think that
was my personal experience with it. I'm not saying it's everyone else's.
I appreciate that. No, I appreciate you sharing that. And I think that's what's so important about this movie, Sirius the Movie, is that instead of people going into fear about the unknown, it is a form of preparation and awakening for people who may have no idea. So I think we're all here to embrace the unknown in whatever form of ET shows up. I agree with you that if they wanted to take over the planet and control civilization, they would have done that long ago. So there's no need to fear. It's just that they are so different than us. Their thought processes are so different. And yet, as you're saying, there's a place of meeting each other in love and understanding, and that's very exciting.
And you're right about that. And many of the messages we've got, and I can almost quote this, one that we got from a very powerful presence was that they said, do not think of us as gods or demons. Think of us as your older brothers and sisters and cousins.
Right.
And that framed it in a different way. Now, maybe you come from a dysfunctional family and you hate your older brothers and sisters and cousins, and there's not much I can do about that.
Right.
You get the spirit of what they were saying there, which is that's a proper kind of perspective. They've had more experience. They've evolved more, but they're not holding themselves up as gods. They're extending a helping hand.
And yes.
It's compassion. And they're offering us a world of love and peace that they have probably fought to get to at some point in their past and have now realized the joys of getting along. And why wouldn't they want it for the rest of us? They love us.
Well, we're also part, if you're connecting with a being in consciousness, it means you are linked to that being. And there's no ignoring a part of yourself that is still running around in a primitive warlike fashion. They are here and extending a hand, but we have to extend our hand back.
Exactly.
If we're going to pull ourselves up out of the ditch, because we've been in the trenches here. We've been.
Oh, you know, absolutely.
Just like what you said, we have nothing to fear of ETs. We have to fear each other and the nuclear arsenal we've created and the wars we've created. I mean, that's the fear. And of course we project that out onto the unknown.
Yes, yes, yes.
And there's no need to. I think the universe is compassionate and I think they are waiting for us to wake up, to grow up, to cheer up, you know.
I like that too. Yeah, be a good cheer, you know.
Right, because you know, and I'm shocked, you know, when I'm interviewing people, and I won't mention names, but very prominent people in the consciousness community, and I bring up the idea of extraterrestrial civilizations, they put it down. They say, what does that have to do with me? I mean, these are people at the forefront of consciousness, and I've interviewed all the big names, and they don't get how this is a key factor in our planetary evolution. It's just like, how do you not get that? You know what I'm saying?
No, exactly what you're saying, because I'm astonished at the very same thing. I'm probably not as widely read or interview people the way that you do, obviously. So you have, and I respect hearing what you're saying, because you have a breadth of engagement there with others who are leaders in this community and consciousness that many of us don't. And it's astonishing for me to hear you say that. And I know that it's true.
Yeah.
From what you're saying. I'll tell you what, when I had my first week of training, my wife, who's very supportive and is my partner in this work, in the very beginning, the first time I went for a week training, said basically, well, I know they're out there, and I do believe that there's life out there, but how does it affect me? And, you know, I'm paying the bills, I'm going to work. How does that affect me? That's nice. Run along, dear. Have a nice week. Have fun. I support you. And she wasn't saying that to be demeaning. She really meant, have fun, and I know it's important to you, and I support you. I talked to her every morning after the previous night's engagements out in the field, and would talk excitedly for like an hour about what we had seen, what we had contacted. Along about the fourth day, she said, well, I've got some news for you, you know, before I could start my little spiel. And I said, well, yeah, sure. What is it? She said, well, last night at the foot of our bed, just as I was getting ready to fall asleep there in the dark, and my wife is she's clairvoyant. She's a really great psychic lady. She said, I saw four half-materialized, 3-4-foot-tall white bipedal humanoids there at the bed, just, and I could just tell they were looking at me, and they were very quizzically looking at me as if to say, who are you? And they engaged her. They were very sweet, and she's very sensitive to these energies, very non-threatening, just they were inquisitive. And she said, so sweet, very sweet. And then she realized that they had followed an energetic link, a path for me at Mount Shasta to our home in the San Francisco Bay Area, because I had been talking to her, and it's the energy of love that connects people, right? They had followed it back to our bedroom, and they were looking at her like, okay, this is what this other guy's excited about. Who is she? And she welcomed them, and they stuck around a little bit. And the next thing she said to me was, I'm coming with you next year to the training. Says, I get it now. This is personal. They're really here. You know, they're really real to me now.
That gives me chills, that story.
It's the absolute truth. I would
no,
not.
No, I totally get it. And to follow an energetic line back to your wife, that shows you, in a sense, what we're all capable of doing. But, and, you know, just to go back to the other subject about these ET abductions, not to dwell on it, but it's like, it's just, they are here to welcome us. And if people look at it in fear, that's how they're going to interpret it. If they look at it as your wife did, wow, open, these beautiful beings are here and they're different, and who are they and who are you? That's the level of exchange that is the evolved perspective. Mm-hmm. It takes us out of the indulgence of our conditioned mind, and when we can do that, we realize there's something more, and we can actually meet them as equals on some level of sentience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that frees us. When you realize there may be types of economic, political bondage that we're in here on Earth, and, you know, and all kinds of theories and things abound that give us some evidence that we haven't always been in control in many levels in our institutions. Another way we've been in bondage, again, is that fear that you're talking about. If you can open up, like my wife did, and let the curious to kind of be as a child and allow that curiosity to circumvent the fear, then you open up that whole new realm of experience and you free yourself. You're freed from the fear. That is as liberating as any escape from a prison. or a system or anything else, just as liberating, because it starts with a very intensely personal liberation there from that fear. And I can't preach to everybody and just say, okay, stop being afraid and accept. We all have our different paths and our different tolerances for this. But at least I can say, you know, listen, be open-minded, be curious, be like a child and say, I'm willing to try a new experience, and I'm willing to put my best love and goodwill towards it. Use your goodwill. Maybe you can't embrace it completely, but project the goodwill and the openness. And if there's a sliver of light there in you that you're doing that, some ET may find that and find a way to communicate. It might be a lucid dream. It might be a touch on the shoulder, on the knee. It might be weird electrical phenomena that just starts happening, like with the lights. All of these things and more have been reported by our teams in the field as evidence of contact. It's not always about the lights in the sky, as cool as those are, and I will always love seeing that and interacting with them. But it's also more intensely personal. And again, if you're open, you can find different ways that they are creative in reaching you, because they will always find the situation that is safe for them and for you to appear and to communicate. Sometimes they can't do a full-on materialization because there are satellites out there in the Star Wars system that will detect them and try to shoot them down.
And also people aren't ready. If they think that it may generate fear in some people present, they won't do that either, you know.
Exactly. So,
but also getting back to the point of what your wife said, how does this affect me, which is the same question that these leaders in the consciousness movement, and they're major. I mean, they're out there on television all the time. They don't get how that expand them. Yes.
Ask them this next time, Alan. Say, yes. Okay, how did you get here when the interview, or what are you using right now? Did you use your car to drive here or take mass transit? Used fossil fuel, right? Did you fly here? You used fossil fuels again. Did you have to pay some electric company for the lights that are on in your home? How about the computers that run? Just think of the energy alone. The whole world, of course, needs energy to survive on so many different levels. What if these ETs could come fully with their devices, their propulsion systems that got them here, and introduce free energy that's clean forever for all of us? How's that for affecting you? Never pay another utility bill. Run your homes, your businesses, your factories, your automobiles. Grow your crops. End poverty, end hunger, possibly end disease. Does that affect you? Is that good enough? Ask them that. Is that good enough? If that's not good enough, what would it take to convince you that this matters in your life? And Sirius is going to focus on that. As Dr. Greer, I believe this is a quote, and I'm probably, let me just paraphrase it. He's saying, yes. The question is not do they exist, even though the movie will go into all the evidence to prove it to those who are unconvinced, hopefully. It's not that do they exist, it's how are they getting here? Let's focus on that. And why is there this vast bureaucracy above government level secrecy that's been covering it up? Do you think maybe they have an agenda about not wanting to give up their greed, their power, their control, their money, their wars? Because it would free the rest of us from having to scratch out a living. Half the planet goes to bed hungry every night, not knowing where their next meal. Ask those folks, 3.5 billion of them, whether that would affect them, that they don't have to do that the next day because free energy will bring them food to fill their bellies.
Oh, free energy will free our society to bring us, as we talked in the beginning of the show, if you were listening to about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, imagine if we all had all the food and abundance and technology any of us ever needed, we could develop a unique culture that was dedicated to creativity, arts, and feeling.
Yes.
How to feel more of who we are as human beings. And that's where we're coming into, I think.
And that's where we're headed, an era of universal peace. We can have it if we want it, but first we have to be informed. And like the leaders that you mentioned, the consciousness movement, who are informed, intelligent, wonderful people, they have to make the connection. All of us have to make this connection that this matters. These civilizations really do matter. There are stories, and I believe some of them, that they've averted nuclear war for us. How's that for mattering to you?
Oh, I know. Well, of course, in these citizen hearings that have been coming up and the ones that have been in the past with Stephen Greer and Stephen Bassett, they've had military people talk about how UFOs have appeared over nuclear silos and have deactivated the nuclear triggering devices. So I think very much they are aware of our history. They have been protecting us from planetary destruction.
From ourselves.
From ourselves, exactly.
Not from ourselves, yeah.
Yeah. No, but the other angle I wanted to talk about when people say, what's the big deal? How does it affect their lives? Of course, let's say, how does it affect our lives that there are people living in Japan or China or anywhere that we're not directly connected with? Our awareness of other forms of beings expands who we are as human beings. So just entering or welcoming into our awareness that there are these other beings, the other is a classical philosophical question. By welcoming the other expands more of who we are. Mm-hmm. So when we welcome the other from a different planetary civilization, what that does is bring the Earth together as humanity. We become the unit of humanity, but only in relationship to the other. And I think that is very important, and that changes the fundamental ways we think about ourselves as a collective civilization.
Well, it takes us out of our egos and out of our me, all through the day, I me, mine. When you consider that the other is out there and the other can be shifted from an object of fear to one of possible assistance and synergy and love and compassion for you, then the other opens up this whole new vista then of cooperation and evolution and love and this culture, this worldwide culture of peace. Let's try peace for a change. We've tried war. How's that working for you?
Right. It hasn't worked. You know, 60 million people killed in wars in the 20th century, and then we're well into that in the 21st century. We definitely need a change. And don't you feel we're right at the tip of that? Aren't you feeling that?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, that's partly what inspired me, too, is I, like many people, thought, well, what can I do? What can I do? After I spent that week under the stars with Dr. Greer at the training and had this experience that I mentioned with my wife and had contact in the sky and some on the ground, things we saw, I was going to leave that week and thought to myself, my God, this has changed my life. I was interested in this as a child, kind of set it aside to have a normal kind of adulthood with school and marriage and kids. Now my eyes are really open. I said to myself, what can I do? I decided to become active and organize all the people that Dr. Greer had been educating and all the seeds he had been planting and contacting those people and said, hey, let's get together once a month and make contact together. Something we can do in our spare time, doesn't cost money, doesn't cost effort. You can do it in your backyard. There's no reason you can't try this if you're open and curious. And that's how ETLetstalk.org really got started. It was from that premise of we can all do this. We can take back our power. We can stop feeling powerless. And we can take some action which will keep us out of fear, because we do watch the bad things that the certain parts of humanity are trying to do to keep us fighting and grappling it with each other.
So how do we do it, though? How do we join into your group? How do we become part of that collective?
That's easy. You just go to etletstalk.org. You sign up as a member, and you enter the social forum. There are people there. It's a social site, somewhat akin to a Facebook, although it's more secure. And you start meeting other people there. You post topics in the forum. You talk. You exchange. You make friends across the world. You arrange to meet people, you know, in the towns next to you. We have a map on there that visually shows you where our members are located, kind of like a Google map. You see dots on the map all over the world, and you can zoom in on them when you're a member and get close and find out if there are neighboring towns of people. You can grab an email address when you hover over the dot of a town that's next to you, and suddenly you can discover someone who's next door that you can contact via email and ask them to get together, either to do a contact or become friends or to share experiences, whatever. That's how you build the community. And the map is amazing. It's just amazing. I used to do that kind of thing manually. I called it ET matchmaking, where people would write to me and say, hey, look, I saw on your list there was someone in, let's say, Chicago. I live near there. Can you put me in touch with that person? Many times I could. Sometimes I wasn't so organized, and I would lose an email, and I would say, oh, I'm sorry, I blew it. I can't. But with the map now, it's self-sufficient, self-serving, in that people can use it by themselves when they're a member and find people on their own anywhere in the world who are doing this work, and that's powerful.
So I'm at the website, ET Let's Talk, and then I go into member login and then become part of the community. Is that it?
There should be a sign-up link there.
I'm looking here. Click here to join the ET Let's Talk social network now. That one, right?
Right. And then you just join. We will be having, because of the growth that we're going to experience through Sirius, we will have to be going to premium memberships and free memberships, and the premium will have a lot more features. But it's well worth it, because we need to be able to sustain our community, and it's going to grow so big and so fast that the three of us who have been maintaining it on a part-time basis have to have the resources, financial and otherwise, to grow the community. So I urge people to go there and join us and support us, because the work we're doing is really for everybody. You know, no one's getting rich on this. Or taking the funds and disappearing somewhere. This is vital resource, money, and participation we need from people to grow the movement and grow the community. And we welcome people who are of goodwill and willing to do that. And there's even instructions on there to tell you how to do the contact protocols. And there are other members that will help you. You can see the conversations of people saying, hey, I tried this. Has anyone had experience? And people will respond.
That's great. So there's over 2,500 members right now.
Right. And we expect, because of Sirius, as you heard Arm and JD talking before I came on, I am so grateful to them for allowing me to talk about this community and what we're doing, because when they flash the etletstalk.org URL up there, hopefully millions of people all over the world will learn about what we're doing and feel empowered and want to join us. So that's my mantra. It's join us. It's easy, and you're going to find a lot of company.
Okay. When do you do it? A specific day of this monthly tuning in together? What time and when do you usually do that?
I publish a schedule to the group who signed up, and I keep them informed, and then I collect their reports and publish it to everybody. So that people they don't know halfway around the world give their experience, and it inspires and educates, and everybody shares that way. And again, people can do it any time of day or of the week that they feel like it. But for the once a monthly coordinated things where we all get together as a group, I send out the emails and I coordinate that. So all they have to do is listen for me.
How connected to Stephen Greer is the group? Or is it?
Group, well, we are separate from what Stephen Greer does. He has his own inspiring corner of the world, and he gets the credit for the great work he's done with Disclosure, and I've been inspired by him, and many of the people in our group have been inspired by his work as well. But we are a separate entity, etletstalk.org, and we are taking the spirit of citizen ambassadors that he has always talked about to the next level as far as we can, to organize more citizen ambassadors to the stars, to do their contact. We call them emissaries.
So, in a way, to wrap up, what does the future look like? I mean, to you, if this really grows, if it sort of catches on that we are part of a collective consciousness that wants to make contact, that is here, that is extending a hand to the next level of consciousness, what's the future look like and the planet look like to you?
I'm cautiously optimistic that as more of our teams get out there and more people join our website and join this movement, because it's about the movement and empowering the people, as we engage the ETs more, as they have asked us to do, they will appear more often. And as they do that, more of us will see them, communicate with them and cause us even more to want to communicate. This becomes a virtuous circle, which delights them and should delight us too. So the future I see is we cooperate, and through the field that we build of cooperation and getting more and more people in every, I want groups in every country of the world. I would love to see tens of thousands of groups doing this, and that's the goal, because it's for the benefit of everybody. We are on the vanguard of this kind of communication. We are creating a portal, an alternate reality for the future of the Earth that's very positive, showing how we can cooperate with these advanced civilizations. I do believe that the morphogenetic field will then reach a certain tipping point, you talked about that earlier, to where worldwide landings can happen. And then there will be no doubt. Yeah, there will still be some haters and some disinfo agents, but the evidence will be overwhelming that they can come openly, and that the forces that have been shutting this down will be in retreat. And that's the positive future I see then, because imagine bringing technologies that can heal our cancers, that can reverse our aging, that can create food for us. They've got a lot of this stuff. So I leave it to your listeners. Imagine the most positive future you can of people getting along in love and cooperation, not having these basic lower level needs in the Maslow hierarchy, and yet being able to create a worldwide planetary culture of peace instead. We have to imagine that. If we don't put that vision out there, it won't happen on its own. And the ETs are willing to help us ramp that up. That's what they're extending their hands for.
Yeah, it's a beautiful vision, and so many things come when you speak about that. First of all, that you are doing the real work of consciousness, of spirituality, just in putting out this intention to gather humanity around the world, and now we have a technology that can bring together a huge community of people to focus on the same ideas, and that I think the world is changing, and I think so many of us have been waiting for this moment to awaken. And I think despite what these leaders in consciousness may think, it will affect each and every one of us to know we're part of a bigger story, a bigger picture, and that we are here to embrace more of ourselves. And this is the good news. This is this is the possibility we've been waiting for lifetimes, for millenniums, for eons. And I think we're at a really beautiful point in our history. I mean, that's my idealistic perspective. So thank you.
It's mine too. Thank you for validating that. And we're doing something about it. We're not just idealizing, right?
But exactly.
We're working it. So join us at etletstalk.org.
Let me just ask you, every week or every month that you do this, are you making contact with what beings and what kind of messages are you getting, and maybe share some of what some of the other people are getting?
We're getting messages of support in various forms. We're told we love you. And some people get healings. Some people go aboard ships in their lucid dreams. We're told we support you. And we're told that they are aware of the momentous opportunity that we have for our evolution here on Earth. And they extend their hands and they say, welcome. I hear that in many different ways from many different people who don't know each other.
Well, it also shows us how multidimensional we really are, you know, as human beings. The capacity of the human mind has been, we've been brainwashed to think we're very limited beings. And another byproduct of reaching out to these ET beings is that we are, we're much more just powerful and expanded than we've been told we were.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. We have nothing to lose but our chains, mental and otherwise.
Right. Someone just also sent me another. I mean, I've been getting emails all day about different ways to tune into the movie. Do you want to just kind of give a closing endorsement of the film, Sirius the Movie?
Absolutely. Drop what you're doing and tune in. There's a, as Arm was saying before he went off the program here, there's a live stream starting, I believe, at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time that is free and that will allow people to have the red carpet experience. And we're having some fun with this, right?
Right.
It's a real honest premiere by an Emmy Award-winning director.
Are you going to be there?
Yes, I will be on the red carpet. I got notified about that, so I'll be smiling and giving my experience when people ask me about it. I look forward to it. It's an exciting time because this movie is really groundbreaking, and I look forward to all the people that are going to have their minds open, that are going to be educated, and that are going to find us at etletstalk.org as well. So people can stream that. You can actually come to our site at etletstalk.org and pre-order the movie and also join in the live stream prior to the movie.
All right. Maybe I will become an affiliate, so maybe they can even look at it on newrealities.com.
That's excellent.
Well, thank you, Costa. What other projects are you working on?
This is my project right now. This is where all my time and effort. Hasn't always been the case. I'm a multitasking kind of guy, but I have recognized the importance of this movement and the critical tipping point we're at and the readiness of so many people. I have dropped everything else that I'm doing to make sure that etletstalk.org, you know, my little piece of it, along with my partners, Jonathan and Lori, at etletstalk.org, that I give all the time and focus and energy and all the great work they've been doing, that they're giving, to making sure that we grow this movement as fast and as far as we can, because we've seen the positive results it's made in people's lives so far, and it can only get better. And it's for the whole earth. We're not just doing it for ourselves.
Oh, no, so, I think you're doing a great job to uplift everyone.
We're all doing the job. You know, there's a different role. We each have a role, and that's what I tell people when they contact the ETs. It's like, okay, have a meeting with them. You know, so, you know, ask them, you know, what can I be doing? What haven't I thought of? Do you guys have any suggestions? This is a real partnership, and it's a serious one. You know, we're not in this to be flaky or funny or anything. Although we're having fun, it's a serious conversation of what can I do to help the process? How can you help me? We ask that of each other as human beings, and we ask that in our communication with the ETs, the same question. What can we do to co-create?
Let me just ask you, are you taking groups out in the Bay Area? I have some friends out there that would love to go on some journey.
We'll be conducting trainings at etletstalk.org. We'll be making some announcements about that, not only in the Bay Area, but different parts of the country and parts of the world. So I ask people to stay tuned for that. Yes, we'll be taking people out in the field starting soon, we hope, maybe by summer, and so that everyone can have their own experiences and get a guiding hand. But again, go to the website and you can read about how you can do it on your own. However, we want to make it an affordable, fun, expansive experience so that for those who want to do it in person, there will be someone in their locale who can lead them out and get the real experience out in the field.
Well, I think it's so important that people realize they can actually make contact with their minds, with these beings, and have a real experience. So, like I said, it expands who we are, our awareness of who we are.
And that's
so
important.
Thank you. Thank you again. How do you say your whole name, Costa?
Macrice.
Oh, is that Greek?
Macrice, yeah. It's shortened from something much longer called Makridakis.
I see. Well, thank you. Thank you again for being on the show. And again, it's ET Let's Talk is your website?
.org, yes.
.org.
ETSTALK, ET Let's Talk.
And again, the movie that you're featured in as an interviewee, the people are...
Yes, it's Sirius, Sirius.
Sirius the movie.
Sirius the film, Sirius the movie. You can Google either of those.
Right, and that is premiering tomorrow, April 22nd, at many websites, just Never Ending neverendinglight.com. I mean, you can see it all over the place, and I hope you...
You can, and we urge people to spread it to their networks everywhere. There will be, you know, ongoing showings after that online, and we hope theatrical releases, and we will be, or the producers will be asking people to maybe rent venues in their own towns to have physical screenings. That will come later and probably quickly. But for right now, it's on the internet, and, you know, we all know how powerful the internet can be for having things go viral. So we hope to make Sirius go viral.
All right. Thank you, Costa.
Thank you.
And I also want to thank the director, Amar Deep, and JD, the producer, who really put a lot of work and made this film possible. And, of course, Stephen Greer, who I guess is the executive producer, but really the mind behind the film, the inspiration, and probably the leading star, if you want to call it that, of the film, would you say?
I haven't seen it yet, and I hope he does have a prominent role in it. I mean, I'm sure he does, of course. And there are many other people as well who are contributing to that. But it's primarily Dr. Greer, Arm, and JD, who the Brain Trust, who started the ball rolling in back in the day. And they crowdfunded this, by the way. It's the most successful crowdfunded. I'm sure that Arm may have talked about that, or JD may have talked about that. I believe $500,000 or thereabouts already. That was epic.
Great. Well, it sounds like we should go. I mean, but I think we've covered a lot of ground. And thank you. It's very exciting. I look forward to it. I look forward to the word being spread and the consciousness being lifted and humanity being changed. So let's just see how it unfolds, right?
Yeah, let's do it. And thank you for the opportunity. This is a wonderful gift you've given us to be able to talk about this, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a main subject for me. I think UFOs, ETs, whatever you want to call it, is the doorway to our expansion. And it may be other aspects of spirituality may also do that, but this is something that can no longer be denied, and we're ready for it. And, of course, it couldn't come at a better moment in our history.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks very much, Costa, for being on the show.
Bye-bye.
Bye. This is Alan Steinfeld, and we've been talking for the last 2 hours about Sirius, the film. That's S-I-R-I-U-S, the film, and that will again be premiering April 22nd. And, of course, you'll be able to download that for $9.99 everywhere on the internet. I will have a post on my website, newrealities.com. And thank you for listening. If you have any comments about what you've heard or anything you'd like to suggest to me, New Realities, you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. And you could, just send me some suggestions, some ideas or comments about what you've heard or your interactions with some of the ETs that are out there. I'm interested. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.